From the boardroom to the shop floor, good business runs on good governance. Join esteemed expert in governance, Dr. Nimrod Dumbele, for the next hour as he takes us beyond governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa.
Good evening and welcome to this week's installments of Beyond Governance here at 101.9 FM. My name is Nimrod Dumbele. It is always a pleasure to share this space and time with you, our village listeners. On the show, we continue to ask difficult, if not pertinent, questions that matters for leadership, governance, and national development, as it were. It has been a little while since we last connected due to a series of Jewish holidays that coincided with the show. I trust our listeners, those who are obviously observers to different religious practices, have had time to reflect and take deep or take heed of the meaning of religious tradition, as it were. Tonight we're tackling a very important issue, as most of us are aware that there is a Madlanga Commission, which obviously has a huge brand implication. I'm joined by Tsepo Matseba, who is a managing director at Repetition First, as well as Mr. Solomon Molobi, who is obviously not a stranger to the show. He's a former consul general to Milan, as well as the CEO of Brand Hill Africa. We are exploring what are the findings and proceedings of the commission mean, not only for governance, but also for how South Africa is perceived abroad, and the broader implication of our nation's credibility in terms of investment climate, as well as international standing. Before we get into the gist of our conversation, allow me to thank Craig Guthrie, who is the controller. He gives us a very good insight in terms of interfacing with the markets, as we all know that it's important. I also urge you, the listener, because the show is meant for you to weigh in on the issue at hand. Our SMS line is 061-895-1019, and of course your views and thoughts are most welcome by my X handle, which is underscore Dr. Mena. In setting the scene, I just want to perhaps maybe capture my line of thought in terms of these very important questions. We know that South Africa has had several high profile commissions of inquiry over the years, Zondo Commission being probably the most recent one. We also had Seriti, we had Marikana, we had Nugent Commission, and obviously it's Madlanga Commission. Collectively, in my view, these inquiries have shaped how the world views governance landscape. From a reputation management perspective, what these commissions communicate about South Africa as a nation, and do they signal democracy that is self-correcting, transparent, or that is trapped in recurring crisis? As I said, in making sense of this really interesting question, I've got Tsepo Matseba, who's an MD at Reputation First, as well as Mr. Solomon Molobi, who's a regular feature of the show, and who's the CEO of Brand Hill Africa. Gentlemen, without any waste of time, let me take this opportunity to welcome both of you.
Good evening, Dr. Mbele, and the listeners, but also good evening to my brother in the trenches, Tsepo Matseba.
Good evening, Dr. Mbele. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And yes, indeed, great to be here with my colleague and friend, Brother Solomon Molobi, and to the listeners of High FM.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. Without any waste of time, let me start with you, Thabo. I mean, in my introductory remark, when you think of a country's brand, its reputation, it's not just about tourism campaigns or investment pitches. It's essential about the trust, credibility, and leadership. What do you make of that statement? Secondly, which countries, in your view, have managed to turn these elements into powerful global identity that South Africa should emulate?
Yeah, so I mean, I think trust is an important component of any country's brand and its reputation, but importantly, a critical component of how the citizens perceive that, because trust actually needs to begin at home. It is not just about the investors. It is not about the outward market. It is also about the citizenry. And the minute you have the kind of challenges that we are facing as a country, it's very, very difficult to convince the citizenry to trust the leadership of the country. And when the citizens don't have trust in the leadership of the country, it presents a different set of challenges that you may have citizens who are actually not, who are despondent and who are not performing at a level that they could be performing because they are not, and who are not willing to pay for services because they don't trust in the system at hand, especially when they get a feeling that that trust is compromised at the security cluster or the level of seniority of the South African police service as an institution, or and indeed even at the level of a ministry. Is there, are there other countries that we could think about where trust has been, and each country has a unique messaging and value proposition that you may want to say they want to promote. And so and each of these countries offer their unique propositions, but all countries worldwide face a common set of challenges, and leadership as a challenge, trust in leadership as a challenge is faced by everybody everywhere, even the most powerful, some of the most powerful nations, the United States, China, have had their own fair share of citizens questioning whether they can trust in their leaders for different aspects. And so I would say, you know, there are countries that you look at like Switzerland, countries that you look at such as Sweden, where there's an alignment, it seems, between citizens and the promise that the nation makes as a brand and its key messaging. And therefore, you may say that there's a degree of trust to a particular extent. But even the most developed nations, we know that that trust is only up to a limited extent, especially when we, given the reality of the kind of complex world we live in a highly digitized world where everyone has got a platform and the means to communicate and articulate a proposition at any given point in time. And so they call that constant scrutiny means that no one can absolutely say I'm the best at this as a country. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that insight, Prasol. I mean, Tampa raised a very pertinent issue that the issue of trust is not only outward looking, but also inward looking. He made reference to how, you know, citizens treat and view issues of trust, particularly taking into account how, you know, we have had so many commissions of inquiry. Your take on that?
Thank you very much, Dr. Mbele, and also to Tsepo. Perhaps let me contextualize what Tsepo was saying by presenting a brand management framework. Just to say that a brand is standing on three legs. One is the identity, your brand identity, and you have both alluded to that. It's when the leadership of an institution or of a country or of a corporate entity communicate their vision. And the second leg is the institutional culture or national culture. And basically, we are looking at the behavior. And with the behavior, we are looking at the actions of the citizenry or employees of that particular institution, whether, to use the cliche, they live the brand, whether whatever they do every day, they are in pursuit of that identity that the leadership has communicated. And the third one is the brand image. The brand image is external. It is when your external stakeholders are perceiving what you are based on, to a large extent, the connection or the juncture between the brand identity communicated by the leadership and the behavior and the actions of people in that institution or in that country. Now, in our case, you have the president, you have his cabinet constituted from various company parties that form part of the government of national unity. You have deputy ministers. They have a particular identity that they are communicating. But the Madlanga Commission and all these other many commissions that we have had are now telling us that actually, when you look at our culture, if you look at our behavior, if you look at what we do every day, we are not living the brand. In fact, what the ministers and many other people, both from the civil and the private sector, are doing what isn't in sync with what our brand identity we were communicating as a country. So there is this juncture. Now, as a result, then you will have external stakeholders perceiving us very negatively. They will have a very negative image of us as a country. And for me, I would say it's good that we are having all these commissions of inquiry. Basically, they mean we are transparent and we are using all our constitutional tools to redress the mistakes. But the problem is that, and this is the perception out there, is that the recommendations are compiled, presented to the president, and nothing happens to the culprits that are identified from these commissions of inquiry. Now, that's why if you look at the mainstream media, people are saying, I know it is just an exercise, it's a waste of taxpayers' money, because people are not going to be held accountable. So this is when our image becomes negative, according to the perceptions of people out there.
Evidently, we've got a long way to go. These are very interesting sites or points that Brasol is actually putting to us, as well as Tepo. If you've just joined us, we are about to take a quick break. We're having a very interesting conversation with Tepo Matseba, who is an MD at Reputation First, as well as Sol Mulobi, the former Consul General to Milan and the CEO at Brand Africa. We are exploring, you know, the findings or the proceedings of the commission, what it actually means in terms of branding, in terms of the brand in nationally and internationally. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back in a second.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Dembele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Dembele. We want to apologize for the technical glitch. If you have just joined us, I'm joined by Tepo Matseba, who's an MD at Reputation First, as well as Sol Mulobi in his capacity as a CEO of Brand Hill Africa. We are exploring a very topical issue about the credibility or the branding of South Africa amidst the commissions of inquiry that we're having. Urge you, the private listener, to air your views and thoughts on this very important issue. Our SM line is 061-895-1019. And of course, you're welcome to drop me a note via my X handle, which is underscore at Dr. Mele. Before we took that short break, Brasol was raising a very important issues that we really have to look at in terms of repositioning or perhaps maybe taking advantage of this commission to reposition South Africa. And one issue that I've picked up, Brasol, has got to do with the government of national unity and the extent to which that could be used as a strategic lever to reposition South Africa as a country that is evolving and that is grappling with democratic ethos, as it were. Tepo, can you come in on that point? What's your view on the points or issues that Brasol raised?
Yeah, so I mean, there is a space for a conversation. And one of the most important things that you are raising is that having conversations is constructive. Having conversations can be meaningful and it can help bring everyone up to speed about the developments and the challenges that we're facing. But conversations without compiling documents, without consequences, or without specific actions and outcome, they become meaningless. And when you look at, when you reflect on things such as the State Capture Commission, there's some work that went there in there. A lot of money was spent on that commission, but the feeling generally in the country, from at least from a citizen point of view, is not sufficient has been done to deal with consequences, and so that we can say that we've been through this exercise, and now these are the steps that we've taken, and these are the outcomes, and these are the solutions that can benefit the country's reputation, the image, but also improve basic little things, such as, besides putting people in overalls, improving things such as fulfilling the promises that we make, because a brand is truly a promise fulfilled. And if you make promises that you're not going to fulfill as a country, you create a lot of dialogue that is meaningless, and you create a trance in the country where citizens may end up feeling like, wow, this is a place where we talk about things, we share things, we expose things, and then the apathy may happen, where eventually people no longer whistleblow, because at the end of it, we compile and talk and do absolutely nothing. And then often commissions are expensive and they take too long. Documents are very, very long, but the actions in from a prosecutorial point of view happen at a pace and speed that we expect. So for me, the opportunity that we have with this current layer of commission, which is actually happening independently, and then there's an inquiry in parliament or a hearing of sorts in parliament, both these instruments about our security cluster present us with a unique opportunity as a country to ensure that not only is this packaged correctly, but that actions happen, and they happen very, very quickly. And that way you will be creating a space where the promise to deal with corruption, eliminate corruption in our security system, in our police, and that promise is fulfilled with consequences, so that once you do that, citizen behavior can change, because they can see, people can see that, oh, all of a sudden, the consequences not only impact those who are who don't have power, in even the most powerful and the most connected and the most equipped within the police environment actually do go through consequences. And that may deter negative behavior and encourage a bit more, start building equity of more positive behavior by citizens. That's how I sort of see it, and as an opportunity.
Well, these are certainly worthwhile observation from your end. A promise made, it's a promise that should be kept. And the extent to which these promises are kept will certainly build confidence to both citizens as well as external stakeholders outside. You know, Prasol, on the very same point, you know, that Tsepo has raised, given the revelations from commission like Zondo and Madlanga now, typically, you know, to what extent these findings can be used to harness the country's reputation? Because Tsepo's point is that we have had so many of these commissions and very little evidence to suggest that these dialogues and these investigations, which, by the way, happened at the huge cost, have any positive fruit. So how can we turn the tide? Do you think from where you're sitting, there's an opportunity to use Madlanga Commission to offset some of the negative, if not adverse, views of South Africans, possibly investors, on these in commissions as just talk shows? Is there an opportunity for us to reflect and become more forceful in the implementation and in consequence management thereof?
The truth is that the revelations from the Madlanga Commission basically says our security system and mechanisms are highly compromised. And if you look at an index of variables that investors consider before they move into a particular country, security and crime are ranked highly. I've done a study on the top 40 variables, and crime and security is number one, and then followed by corruption. Now, if you look at the revelations now, even though there are still allegations coming out of the Madlanga Commission, already this will discourage investors from coming to South Africa. And this happens at a time when South Africa is trying to deal with the issues that were flagged when it was grey listed. For me, it's like it undermines the progress that has already been made, to convince the world that we need to be taken out of the grey list. But for me, the other thing is that we need to develop ethical leadership, and if we have enough and adequate number of leaders who value positive ethics as an important. In fact, we wouldn't even need many of these commissions of inquiry, because in normal democracies where ethical leadership is valued, a person doesn't have to be criminally charged before they take accountability for their actions. The minute their names are mentioned in recommendations of them having transgressed certain regulations, their ethics should be able to tell them that they need to step down. Unfortunately, in South Africa right now, we all guard against the principle of a person presumed innocent until proven guilty. Those are just legal logistics, but the fact that I take an oath before I occupy a particular position, whenever I'm accused of wrongdoing, my ethics should tell me that I have to step down before I argue that no, they have to charge me criminally first before I can step down from my position. Now, if we're able to do this, you look at the UK. Some years ago, there was a scandal of the media bribing the head of the Metro Police. In fact, bribing Metro Police in London, not the head of the Metro Police. But the head of the Metro Police took ultimate responsibility and he resigned his position. He didn't say, I'm going to discipline my police officers who are incriminated. He simply said, their being incriminated reflected failure on his part as a leader, and he then stepped down. This is not what we have in South Africa in many parts of the continent.
These are very interesting observations that you're putting forward. Perhaps maybe, Tepo, can you know, the whole issue of presumption of innocent until proven guilty somehow comes across as a provision of legislation that has been abused by politicians. And it does come across as you know, most of these individuals that have brushes with the law are obviously, some of them are obviously part or have been appointed by politicians, hence the notion of political patronage. To what extent do you think, Tepo, the issue of ethical leadership, to what extent, Tepo, do you think the issue of ethical leadership need to be, you know, prioritized to a point to a point where individuals implicated don't have to wait for commission, they could simply just step down. Is it something that is possible in South African body politic?
It's difficult because in our country we are currently in a political context, but also in the private sector environment. Culturally, we are not wired like other markets, where, for example, the CEO of a company is seen at a concert with another partner that they're not married to, and all of a sudden the next day they appear to tender a resignation and the other party has to resignation, because culturally people in those markets are quick to get to a conclusion of resignations. I think in the UK we've seen prime ministers resign on allegations either of poor performance or misconduct. We are quick to follow the rule of a law process. We are quick to follow the step aside. So it's a lot more in the public sector, influenced by political decisions. And that's why you may find across the ANC-led governments, across the GNU, across the DA-led environments, across the country, you find that people take time to step aside from difficult positions. In fact, they step aside and maybe even come back in parliament, and the next minute they have other senior roles elsewhere. And that's a cultural shift that we need to make. But also importantly, our leaders, especially at a cabinet level, president level, our leaders need to be, besides taking accountability and resigning, they don't leave. The one who appoints and who has the power to hire and fire needs to be in a position to hire and fire. But unfortunately, politically, you have to balance the scale. So you're going to have a situation where there are suspensions after suspensions and after suspensions, and it doesn't seem like things happen as fast as we expect. And unfortunately, there's also an expectation of that innocence until proven guilty is very important as a democratic principle and a key component of our constitution. If we compromise on that, we are going to be in trouble. And that's why you will see someone like President Cyril Ramaphosa suspending someone, allowing the commission to take its course, so that out of the exercise, he then has the basis upon which why a particular person has been dismissed or terminated, whose contract has been terminated. So there's a cultural shift.
Unless, of course, there are consequences and there are drastic action that has been taken. Unfortunately, let's just pause on that. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back. When you come back, I want us to really get to this point wherein procedural, we understand that one is presumed innocent until proven guilty, which is a fundamental democratic principle that we all uphold. But the problem is how, the so what question. Once you've had this commission, what have been the results that give the investor confidence, that gives citizens confidence? Let's take a break. When you come back, we'll thresh these issues out a little bit more.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Mbele. I am having a very interesting thought and thought-provoking conversation with my colleagues here. I'm joined by Tshepo Matseba, who's an MD at Reputation First, as well as Sol Molobi, who is the CEO at Brand Heal Africa. Before we took that break, colleagues were making very interesting observations as to why South Africa is not moving at the pace that it should, purely because there's at one level understand the principle of presumption of innocent until proven guilty, which has been upheld. But on the other hand, is that not much has happened by way of putting men and women in orange overalls, purely because of political patronage. So the point that Tshepo made, which I think is critical, is that culture shift, wherein individuals who are implicated don't have to wait to be pushed. They can individually take their own decisions based on what is forthcoming. What will it take for South Africa? Because that will be a almost like a leapfrogging, Brasol, if you like. Once you get people who just said, you know what, I don't want to bring the organization into disrepute. I don't want to bring the country into disrepute. I will step aside while the investigation has been conducted so that we reinforce this positive message about the country. How far are we? Is there something that, are we working towards, Brasol?
Now, if I was to speak about my observations of the governing party, the biggest party in the government of national unity, I would say that they have quite interesting constructs like renewal, like rebuilding, and at government level, for For 3 decades, I think we've been talking about moral regeneration, and there was even a structure named the Moral Regeneration Movement, which was supposed to build a very positive, a very solid ethical framework, and they were supposed to mobilize all of us as South Africans across the political line to buy into a set of norms and ethics that all of us that could define all of us as South Africans. And unfortunately, the moral regeneration movement is almost non-existent. I haven't heard about it in a very long time. The governing party also talks about cadres who will go through the eye of the needle, but the reality is that when we look at some of the leaders who are implicated and who are very familiar with all the policy documents of the governing party, then I would say that their actions in this instance, looking at what is coming out of all these commissions we've been having, then the country and the international community as a whole have a reason to lose faith in this kind of leadership. Yes, I subscribe to the principle of one being considered innocent until proven guilty, but I say in addition to that, we need to have ethical framework that all of us could subscribe to. And the good thing about ethics is that they place responsibility on an individual. Instead of me waiting for the president to ask me to leave, or instead of me waiting for the president to appoint a commission of inquiry to investigate my conduct, but during the process, when serious allegations are leveled against me, it will be my responsibility as an individual to say I'm stepping down instead of being pushed out. We have very positive policy documents as a country. We have legal instruments. It is up to us to enforce those instruments so that ultimately the citizenry will have confidence in the governance system, and by extension, also the international community will have confidence in us as a country.
I like your party short that you know, international community will have confidence when the agency, which is the individual, are taking decisive action based on allegations leveled against them. But clearly, that is not working. I mean, your point to renewal and rebuilding, those construct and concepts have been thrown around, and they become meaningless, frankly speaking, purely because there's no action, you know, around those. And to your point that, you know, the governing party at some point spoke about rigorous recruitment, selection processes, a vetting system wherein you know, the cadres that are deployed have to go through an hour and a little on paper, perhaps maybe, but in reality, very few evidence that is coming forward. Let me just bring in Tepo here, because Saul raised a very important issue, because, you know, the branding, the brand posture, or how a country is being positioned in the global community, there is a positive correlation in terms of how it has been perceived and the extent to which it may attract foreign and direct investment. To what extent do you think all these governance lapses are adversely affecting South Africa's global standing from an investment point of view? Tepo?
Yeah, so one of the key ingredients, if we apply it at a practical level, when an investor looks at an environment to do business in, is that one of the key ingredients is predictability. that I know that the environment is predictable, that it is safe, that there's a robust financial system, that there's regulation, and that those regulations are observed and implemented or enforced at a country level across government and the private sector. And the problem with our situation that we're facing right now is that it creates doubt. Despite all the work, great work that the financial system is doing, that the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, that SARS is doing, that the Reserve Bank is doing, that the National Treasury is doing, all those ecosystems, you bring them to doubt when you have a situation where an impression is created that criminal cartels are actually colluding with the security cluster, and therefore they are able to bypass legislation. And that creates doubt and instability in the sense that the environment now is unpredictable. We don't know what could happen. And therefore, an international conglomerate might change its mind about setting up a plant in Kabega or setting up an ecosystem in Johannesburg or bringing in a group of experts to come and impart and deliver a project in an environment that is so seemingly unsafe. So that's the red flag. The opportunity, I think, for South Africa is not only to articulate this value proposition at the different strategic platforms like the World Economic Forum, like the context of BRICS, and now with G20, but to is to start to say, to show that there will be consequences in South Africa if you do business, and that in a malicious way, if you are involved in crime, that people will be put behind bars. But additionally, that there are interventions that we are putting in place to prevent preventative measures, to prevent what has happened from happening. So the level of transparency we've shown might work for us, but at some point it might also work against us if we show that our security and intelligence systems are compromised to a point where we actually discuss the nitty-gritties of the insights of how the ecosystem of the police functions. So it's not going to be, there are no quick wins, but there is space and room for us to do the right things and reframe the message and reframe consistently. It's going to take change in behavior so that what the marketers and the communicators say truly match what happens on the ground.
Well, I mean, that's a very interesting insight that you're sharing with us. If you've just joined us, we're having an interesting conversation here with Tepo Matseba, who's an MD at Reputation First, as well as Solomon Lobi, who is an MD or CEO at Brand Africa. We're unpacking the importance of brand positioning in the context of these commissions that are unfolding in South Africa. Prasol, as we gravitate towards the end of the show, looking ahead, what strategic levers can South Africa use to rebuild its brand? And for an example, how can we use partnerships with the private sector, civil society organizations, creative industries to create a positive narrative about the country? Is it something that is possible? How far are we if it's possible? Is it something that we can leverage on? And what will it take for us to elevate the brand beyond just politics? Because civil society has got a role to play. Private sector has got a role to play. It's not only about the politicians that has to, we know they're letting us down from time to time. Your part in short on how to leverage, South Africa, brand by taking into account all these key stakeholders.
I'll recommend a brand development and management model which was developed by Keith Deeney. It's called the ICON model. And the ICON model basically is sitting on four legs. The one says you need to develop new narratives. And the reality is that with us having constituted a government of national unity last year, we need to develop new narratives, and the narratives that integrate us as a society and also help us to develop social cohesion amongst ourselves as all South Africans. And the model also says that with its second leg is that our narratives have to be organic and they have to be rooted in our country's identity, the brand identity that we spoke about. And this should be based on what the government of national unity seeks to achieve for this country. And then integration is also very critical. Like you were saying earlier on, Dr. Mbele, that we need to mobilize both civil, public, and private sectors for us to be able to come up with one positive narrative about this country. Because ultimately, word of mouth is a very important tool for promoting a particular country or a product brand. So which means that if we are singing from the same hymn book on South Africa as South Africans, we could be able to convince investors and tourists to have faith in us as a country. And we also need to come up with a very good context that speaks to the new ethical framework or value system that defines us as a country. And if we are able to do all these four things, we should be able to come up with a picture or an image of a country that everyone across the world will emulate.
I couldn't agree with you more. I suppose one of the most important things that, and then I'm picking up from your addresses, part of innovation, obviously, and taking advantage of the GNU is the construct of meritocracy, getting, you know, employing people based on skills, not based on patronage. The moment we move away from race-based type of employment, the better, because there are a lot of people who are sitting outside of which they have critical skills and competencies that is needed to drive not only the public sector, but private sector. So these are kind of issues. Tsepo, your parting shot. I'm interested to hear your thoughts, especially based on what Brasol has spoken about.
Yeah, so I think to wrap this up, there's going to be an investment required in this thing about reinvesting in a sort of cultural and moral fiber, where we reconscientize our society and young people at a young age, that it is our responsibility and doing the right thing. It is an important ingredient of a growing democracy. It's an important ingredient of a developing economy. And if we want to put our economy on the global world stage into the future, we're going to have to take responsibility. And part of that responsibility is to take accountability for our own actions, good and bad. And then the second, at the government and political level, we are going to need to get more citizens, younger people, to participate in the political system, because that lack of participation creates space for hegemony, where a few political parties hold the most power. And when that happens, you have a difficulty of arrogance, because even if I've done something wrong, there shall be no consequences and I'll continue where I am. So those two opportunities will present, you know, the space for us to reframe, and so that even at a training level of the, if we take it right now to the police, we need to change the culture in terms of the police network, learning how to do the right thing and appreciating that doing the right thing is the right thing for
absolutely. No, Tsepo and Brasol, thank you so much. We're going to have to leave it here. We have run out of time. It has been absolutely beautiful. Thanks for sharing your insights and observations on this very important and complex matter.
Thank you very
much.
They were. That was Solomon Lobi, who's a CEO at Brand in Africa, as well as Tsepo Matsema, who's an MD at Reputation First, giving us insights on how to leverage on the commissions of inquiry from a branding point of view, for we all know that South Africa is not doing great. And you know, as I reflect and based on this kind of conversation, my concluding remarks is that the story of South Africa's brand is still being written. Commissions like Mazanga and Zondo may have exposed fractures in governance, but they also remind the world that South Africa is a democracy. We are not afraid of confronting our flaws, the truth of the matter is that the challenge before us is to transform exposure into renewal and inquiry, renewal inquiry into integrity. Ultimately, South Africa's brand will not be defined, in my view, by scandals we uncover, but by the reforms that we pursue. That will take courage to act and build and restore faith in our institution. We're going to have to leave it here. Thank you so much for tuning in. Shalom.